This is The End User, episode 115 for Tuesday, November 13th. Disastrous for the civilians. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm your master and commander, Taylor Marr.
Master and commander, I don't know.
Yeah, okay. That was a stretch. I really like those books.
Overstepping your bounds there, maybe a little, but... Now you can be master. And
get off my ship.
Hey, you can be master and commander of the podcast. That's a pretty good title. They are good
for
books.
For this week, anyway.
They are good books. Bad movie.
Yeah. Well, I like the movie, too, but the books are better.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're not here to talk about ships. We're here to talk about tech news and all things that the end user has been using. So what do we got going on in the
Well, frankly, I didn't think we were going to be talking about BlackBerry either. They're the top story of the week. So they've made an announcement, BlackBerry 10, that new operating system that they've been working on for, how long has it been, Chris? Forever?
Forever.
As well as their new phone are both set to launch at the end of January 2013.
Yeah, so this is an exciting time for them. I feel like this is a moment that is going to make or break BlackBerry. They've still got a lot of phones that are deployed out there, particularly in the business. It's even still a business status symbol, despite all of the knocks that it's been taking over time. And I think if they fail to show that they have the imagination to move in the right direction, then I think they're going to start to see a serious downward swing, as if that hasn't already happened, right? They may even be too late with this.
Yeah, I am really worried about them and the timing of this announcement, if I'm allowed to look into it, which is, I think, a little bit ridiculous. But the fact that they made this announcement almost 3 months ahead of time, they really want consumers to not forget about BlackBerry. They want people to know, look, we've been working on it. It's almost done. But still, 3 months out. I mean, they can't be done yet. And so now I'm wondering, they've given themselves a deadline. They're going to crunch for 3 months and hopefully they come out with a good product by then. But still, it's been a very long time since we heard particularly noteworthy things from BlackBerry. So yeah, a lot will be riding on this. And I feel like every time we mention BlackBerry, we have to say that.
Yeah, they need to do it now. And if they don't do it now, then they're going to be on a slow decline. Now, they may still exist. I could see them existing as a services company of some sort that just makes services that people use that are secure for business communication, that kind of thing. I feel like I could definitely see them kind of fit into that niche and maybe even writing like Android apps or something like that. But as a large hardware manufacturer, I feel like this is the time.
Yeah. Well, I wish it was now instead of 3 months from now. You know, I would like to see what it is they've been working on, but we'll have to wait till then, and they will have to keep working, I guess.
Yeah, they've got some work to do. Or if they've been developing their software correctly, they don't have much work to do. They just have to make little bits and tweaks.
Now we have a little tidbit of news from AT&T. Now, remember when Apple announced that they were going to offer FaceTime over cellular data connections? They said it was dependent on carriers, and then we heard from the big three iPhone carriers in the U.S. Verizon said, sure, but it's got to be on our tiered data plans. Sprint said, sure, and we don't have tiered data plans. And AT&T says, oh, you should sign up for a new family share plan, and then you can get FaceTime. Well, they've gone back on that a little bit. You still need to be on a tiered data plan. The grandfathered unlimited data plans are excluded, and it's also only on LTE devices with certain exceptions. And they're going to be rolling this out over the next 8 weeks or so.
Yeah, so they've gotten a little tizzy with the FCC over this. This and the net neutrality rules that are weak but are in place here in the United States. And they were basically pressured into doing this. And I don't think they wanted to do it. I think it was against their business interest to do this. But they really have to do it.
Yeah, AT&T actually over the last week and a half has faced a lot of concerns from the FCC and the FTC and also from lawsuits. So they lost a court battle over the fact that they had arbitrarily upgraded certain people's data plans to monthly plans, which made some prepaid customers end up paying a lot more. On top of that, they are applying for further leniency from the FCC in their capacity as a telecom, because AT&T has their U-verse fiber optic internet service, which is available in some areas.
And so I think, why wouldn't they just flip this on for cellular data? I'm not sure I understand why they're so hesitant to do this. I mean, is it really going to crash their network? I kind of doubt it. How often do you even use FaceTime in your experience?
Well, if I was able to use it at any time, I mean, if you think about FaceTime, you have to know someone with an iPhone or an iPad, and then you have to be sure that you're both on Wi-Fi at the time. But if my friends know that they can reach me at any time over FaceTime, maybe they would be more likely to call me that way.
Yeah, perhaps. It seems like a pretty limited thing, and I'm surprised it really wasn't available earlier. Now, another thing is that if you have a grandfathered unlimited data plan, like I do for Verizon, then if that's your case and you're on AT&T, then you're going to have to give up your unlimited plan, which seems kind of horrible. Like I said before, you can't use that much data. I mean, I know it's video chat, but I mean, Skype exists, and we've been using that for a long time. And unless it's crazy HD video, it's really not that much bandwidth in this day and age, is it?
Well, remember that FaceTime with new Apple devices is, in fact, crazy HD video.
There you go.
Because they just upgraded their front-facing cameras to 720p.
Yeah, and well, does FaceTime actually use 720p? See, I've never. What's the verb there? I've never committed a FaceTime.
I don't know the specifics of the compression algorithms, but I can say that in my tests with the new camera on my iPhone 5, it is a much better fidelity.
Yeah, than it was previously.
Well, so, than it was on older phones with VGA FaceTime cameras.
On the 4 and 4S, right?
Correct. And the iPad 2 and 3.
Right. So.
And iPod Touch 4 and 5.
I'm a bit confused by this because I'm not sure I understand exactly how much this would really affect the network with the amount of people that I see using it. I see people around using it sometimes, but I'm really not sure it would affect the network that much. And I feel like what they really want to do is charge for it,
Question here is, would people use it more if everyone had unfettered access?
Hey, you remember when Apple said they were going to have an open API for FaceTime? Whatever happened to that?
Sure, they're getting around to it.
Yeah, maybe in the future, I suppose. All right, well, let's move on to some hardware announcement. We've got Acer's new Chromebook in the pipe. And that is a $199 Chromebook, which is based on an ARM processor. So that's very interesting. They're joining the likes of Samsung, although their Chromebook was way more expensive than $199. This is a great entry-level laptop to me. I still don't think they'll have a lot of success in the marketplace, but for $199, that's not a terrible deal there.
It's a really impressive price because, I mean, at the $200 price range, it's like buying an iPod. I mean, you can get this as a, you know, another device, regardless of how many devices you have, if you're looking for something that basically just does browsing and email and stuff. So it's not a great computer. It's not really
It's not meant to be, right?
By the standard definition, but it's $200 and you get Chrome.
Right. And depending on how you live your life, I mean, you could live your entire life in the Google ecosystem. And if that's the case, this would be a really good option for you. It's got Wi-Fi.
Well, I think if this was your only laptop, this would be a terrible option.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
And that's my personal opinion.
Or at least get one for the kids or something.
Yeah, as another device, I think it's great. For the kids, it's great. If they mess it up, no problem. Well, problem, but not a big problem.
Yeah, a $200 problem, not an $800 problem.
Right.
So I could see that being a little bit easier to deal with. But so these Chromebooks are getting downright commodity. I mean, at $199, you're the entry level iPad is $500, and you're at $200.
That's not fair, Chris. There are a lot of iPads that are cheaper than $500 now.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. How much is the old iPad and the old iPad? What was their price, Doc? It was $100?
You mean for the iPad 2? They're still selling that for $400.
Right, for $400.
And then there's the mini.
Right, and the mini I'm not really counting. That was $350. But this is a very interesting entry into the marketplace. And like I've said this before on the podcast, I want to see where the Chromebooks go, but I'm not terribly excited about them getting a bunch of market share. I don't think that's going to happen. But I don't know. I mean, at $200, maybe it will.
Yeah, I think they could. I think it definitely fits for some people. And I think those people are only going to become more common.
Yes, absolutely. All right, well, let's move away from our top news. We've got one more. I'm sorry.
We do have one more piece I do not of top want
to,
news.
I do not want to prematurely turn on the afterburner, so let's get into our last story here.
It could be disastrous for the civilians.
It could be disastrous. Everyone's eyebrows would be singed off. We don't want that. So I thought this was kind of interesting in an anti-consumer way. Microsoft is going to retire its instant messaging service in Q1 of 2013, reports are saying. And they're going to move people over to Skype, which I don't see making any sense whatsoever. What do you think?
I think from a corporate strategy perspective, it kind of makes sense. Clearly, they don't want to continue developing Messenger IM when they're not getting the level of innovation and support that they were looking for. They paid a lot of money for Skype. They might as well try to push as many people over there as they can. The problem is that Skype just isn't a substitution for Messenger.
Yeah, it's really not. Because using their desktop client for instant messaging is just horrible. It doesn't work very well at all. Now, that said, it may be a little bit better on tablets or something like that, but I just, moving away from Messenger doesn't make sense from the consumer's perspective. Now, it may make all the sense in the world from the business perspective, but using Skype on a desktop as your only instant messaging client is a nightmare.
Yeah, and the 100 million people who are still using Messenger are not going to be doing that. They will switch to Google Chat or probably Facebook Chat. I bet a lot of them will go that way.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
Since they're largely international users, I don't know what people in other countries use. Besides MSN, because I know a lot of people internationally that are still currently using Messenger.
So we'll return to AIM, perhaps.
Maybe, although that's not really going to be fully supported by AOL in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I've moved all of my chatting stuff over to Google, and I think you've done the same, right?
I have, yeah, unless someone contacts me on Facebook Chat.
Yeah,
I've turned off Microsoft Messenger. I've turned off AOL Instant Messenger. I'm predominantly just on Google Chat, or preferably iMessage.
On iMessage, right. So I'm excluded from that one. But yeah, on Google Chat.
No, you are voluntarily excluded from that. You can easily sign up for a free account.
I suppose I could. Do they have a web interface?
They do.
All right.
Me.com or iCloud.com.
Do they have a Windows Phone app?
They do not have a Windows Phone app as far as I know.
There is
no app for iMessage. It's all fully integrated in Apple devices.
That was the pause of disgust right there. I heard it in your voice.
So that brings me to one last piece of top news that I forgot to throw in the show notes, but I just wanted to mention really quickly. I mentioned Apple's iMessage, and you can get to it on me.com or iCloud.com. That's been true for a while, but actually all of Apple's Mobile Me users have had an email address at me.com, and you create it when you first sign up for an iCloud account or a Mobile Me if you signed up for it back then. But now they've added at iCloud.com, and so you have the same inbox is available to you whether you use the email address at me.com or at iCloud.com. So Apple just threw that in there as a freebie.
All right, cool. Well, I won't be having one of those, but good news for everyone else, I suppose.
But you could. You could, Chris. It's free.
Well, just because it's free doesn't mean I necessarily want to use it. I, I'm all in with the Google services.
Well, I don't use it either, Chris. I use my Gmail account, but it's still there. I still have it.
Very true.
All right. Yeah, so enough about that.
You may use that about as much as I use my Outlook.com account. I definitely use Gmail as my primary email and my primary chat, but I use my Outlook.com account for syncing Windows Phone and that kind of thing. So maybe that's a pretty strong corollary there, actually.
Yeah, I would say those are definitely complements. Better complements than Microsoft Messenger and Skype, which just have completely different functions.
All right, well, let's move on to the afterburners, unless you got anything else there to throw in the mix.
Nope, no more surprises.
All right, so maybe we're burying the lead in this podcast, but I wanted to put this story in the afterburners because we didn't really know what's going on, and it's still developing as we speak. So it looks like Steven Sinofsky is actually going to be leaving Microsoft. That's the former now head of the Windows division, and he's been there forever. Julie Larson-Green is going to be taking over as the head of the Windows division. Now, this is very interesting to me because I thought that Steven Sinofsky was the champion of the interface formerly known as Metro. And I guess maybe now it's done and it's time to move on, or maybe he's just been there too long. We don't really know yet.
I'm sure we'll probably hear rumors in the coming days and weeks. But okay, Chris, you're the Microsoft guy. I know some people at Microsoft. I know about Steve Ballmer. I know about Bill Gates. And you've told me a little bit about Steven Sinofsky, but why is this such a big deal right now?
Because he's been the leader of this huge switch that we've been talking about with Windows 8 and with Metro and all the design style of their most recent Office apps and that kind of stuff. He's really been at the helm of a lot of that. And it's really shocking for him to step down now. Because, like I said, maybe now it's complete and mission's over. And maybe he decided up front, perhaps, that he was going to take on this challenge and then leave for something better or just retire. I'm not sure, but he's been at the helm here for this new vision of things. And that's really shocking to see him step down for me.
You want to hear my wild speculation?
Uh-oh, let's have it.
I think Steven Sinofsky is leaving to form a startup with Scott Forstall of Apple.
What would it be called?
It would be called Metro Design.
Metro Design Company. There you go. Incorporated. TM. They can't use that anymore. We just came up with it.
I'm sure they'll come up with something else.
All right. Well, this is the afterburners, so let's get on with it. We've got a leaked screenshot of the Office for iPhone, iPad, and Android. And, you know, we've known that they're cooking this up for a while, and it's interesting to see it leak now. So suffice it to say that we will have our eye on this going forward, because it's very interesting to me if Microsoft releases a cross-platform version of Office for all of the tablet devices for Android and iOS. That would be extremely interesting. So we'll keep our eye on that, and it will be in the not afterburners if we get some more news in the future there.
Yeah, and this is all just rumors and leaks, but the evidence is insurmountable at this point. It's pretty clear that they are working on an imminent release of Office for iOS.
Right, and Internet Explorer 10 will actually be coming to Windows 7. It looks like that will be coming down the pike tomorrow is the rumor we've got here.
So that would be Tuesday, November 13th.
Correct. Thank you for that. And it's, you'll have to check it out tomorrow. In fact, by the time you hear this podcast, if you've downloaded the podcast at least, you'll probably have a look at it. So it'll be the desktop version for Windows 7. And as you know, there's a Internet Explorer 10 in the Windows 8 style apps that is way different, but this is a little more in line with the Internet Explorer 9 side of things. So have a look out for that if you are interested in the next version of Internet Explorer.
All
personally,
right.
I'll be keeping Chrome.
In other browser news, tell us about Chrome 23.
Yeah, so Chrome 23, they released the update. And, you know, they've got this rapid development style that is way different than other companies. And in fact, you know, Firefox has adopted this same style of development. And the notable thing about Chrome 23, I think Chrome 22 went in the middle of the night and we didn't even notice, but they finally added the Do Not Track headers that you can turn on. Now, it's off by default, but if you care about your privacy, you can go switch those headers on, and that will signify your intent to not be tracked. Now, they may or may not pay attention to that on the server side of things, but I feel like that's a positive direction for Chrome to be going, even when Google makes a lot of its money off of tracking cookies and stuff like that. So kind of interesting to see that. And if you want to go enable those, then feel free.
Excellent. Well, we have some phone announcements from AT&T, the big one being the HTC One X Plus, HTC's new flagship phone, is going on sale November 16th, and it's going to be priced at $199 with contract, obviously. Great fully featured phone. They've also announced the One VX, which is their new budget phone, although it will still have pretty good display, 4.5 inches, 540 by 960, and it'll have LTE. One more announcement from AT&T, and that is the Galaxy camera, which we've talked about on the show before, and they finally announced that it will be available on November 16th as well, without a data plan. Without subsidy, excuse me. So without a contract, it'll be $500. And so then you can opt in or out of the data plan just like you can with an iPad.
It's a little bizarre there that they are going to subsidize a camera. And I know it runs Android, but that's a little bizarre.
It is a little strange. And we've talked about whether people will go for this. Probably not very many people will. But if you really wanted a 3G connected camera, well then this is your best bet.
And I just want the interface on this thing. That's what I really want. So I don't really care about the data plan per se, but the interface is very interesting to me.
All right. Well, if you want to see the interface in action, go check out the link in our show notes because they've got a video.
Yeah, and Amazon is going to give its customers an option at Staples. They're going to roll out the Amazon Locker service, which I've seen around in 7-Eleven in my neck of the woods. But
right, we've talked about these Amazon lockers. They've been slowing them, rolling them out in certain neighborhoods across the country, mainly at 7-Elevens. The big news here is that they will be introducing the lockers at Staples.
Right, so Amazon continues the rollout. Do you think this is good or bad for Staples? I'm not so sure.
I think it's probably good. I mean, I would imagine they're getting a little bit of revenue from Amazon just to be able to host the lockers there.
Yeah, maybe. Well, Amazon keeps on trucking, so I'm sure they'll get some more partnerships as we go forward. So Staples now and other stores later.
Right. Finally, if you are a Hulu user and you've been waiting for CBS shows, they've been conspicuously absent. Every other major network is on Hulu and Hulu Plus. But CBS has been missing, and if you watch any new CBS shows, you'll still be missing them. However, they finally inked a deal that library CBS shows, that is, older shows like Star Trek, I Love Lucy, The Twilight Zone, one of my personal favorites, Jericho, will be on Hulu Plus, but not on regular Hulu.
Cool. So Hulu gets bigger and badder, sort of, I guess.
Well, Hulu Plus does, but Hulu still CBS-less.
Yeah, on a side note here, right before we turn off the Afterburners, I'm a little disappointed that the Windows 8 app is Hulu Plus, not regular old Hulu. I wish that I'm using Windows 8 on my laptop. I would think that would not really be a Hulu Plus device.
Well, that is the case for most of Hulu's apps. They came out with one Windows 7 and one Mac app, or maybe it was even a Vista app, that ran regular Hulu. But they've since taken the direction that Hulu Plus is going to be platform supported, and Hulu is free Hulu is generally web interface only.
Yeah, they do have that. It's still laying around there for Windows 7. You can get the Hulu desktop app, and I use it all the time in my home theater PC. So
yeah, it's still out there. But this is a direction that they've made. Who knows why? Could be limited resources. Could be they decided they wanted to take advantage of consumers or not.
Yeah.
But they have officially gone in that direction that Hulu Plus is more platform support.
Right. All right. So let's turn off the Afterburner, Mr. Marr, as long as you're comfortable doing so.
Okay. I'm prepared. Let's turn it off.
Let's move in. We've had a top-heavy show, so we'll move into the end-user stories. And I've got a little link here that is a little off the beaten path for us. It's not necessarily tech, but it's involved in technology culture, I'd say, right? It's the
sure. Let's go with that.
There we go. It's the Battlestar Galactica new series called Blood and Chrome, and it's a YouTube exclusive. And they've put out the first two episodes, so I watched both of them. And the trick there is that they're not really episodes; they're more like a quarter of an episode or something like that. So it kind of leaves you on a cliffhanger. So you might be well advised to just kind of let them pile up for a little while before you actually get into it. And it seems pretty interesting. I'd say it's at least as good as Caprica, maybe a little lower budget, but not a whole lot. And so if that's interesting to you, then you should probably go watch it. It's not too bad. But that said, you know, because of Caprica, my expectations were pretty low, I suppose.
Well, they've done, actually, the producers of Battlestar Galactica have done several web series before. But this is definitely a higher production value than most of those. I haven't watched it yet because I am, just like you said, waiting for a few to build up.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to do the same going forward. And what is really nice is that it's in 1080p on YouTube. So that's pretty nice.
That is nice, yeah.
So I guess you could watch it on the Retina iPad. And they do high-quality streams on the most recent iPad, right?
They do, yes. I'm not sure what the status of the YouTube app on the new iPad is, because they have not yet updated the iPhone app to fit the iPhone 5.
Right, so Six Layer in the chat there says it's like a cut-up pilot, and that's exactly right. So if you want it to stick around, you better go watch it. otherwise, it may not be around. So I don't know. We'll keep our eye on that one. And, you know, I probably won't have a full review later or anything like that, but I just thought it would be interesting to pass along that that was happening. So from Battlestar Galactica to our tip. Sorry, not our tip of the week. The green story.
Green tech story of the week.
Yes. What do you got for us, Mr. Marr?
Every time I come out with a green tech story, it usually follows a certain pattern. There is a problem that needs to be addressed and a new technology that addresses it. And so the problem that I'm talking about today is electronics waste. And we want to be able to make it easier for electronics to be broken down and recycled or reused at the bare minimum for their raw material components. Now, with circuit boards, that's a big part of the waste. There are so many different materials soldered or printed onto these circuit boards. It's really difficult to break them down into their individual components. But the silicon that the circuit board is printed on is, you know, just your basic silicon. If there was any way to just be able to easily remove that, we could solve a lot of e-waste just like that. So a new product from, an experimental product from the UK's National Physical Laboratory has created dissolvable circuit boards. So they're perfectly stable in air and room temperature water. In hot water, the circuit boards slowly just dissolve into the water, and then you're left with all the raw components, which you can separate.
Neat. So that sounds pretty good. I mean, we throw away just a lot of these circuit boards from phones and stuff.
And what usually happens to them now is they'll get sent over to third world countries where they'll be burned. And then people will sift through the ashes and just pick out the little flecks of metal and try to get enough that they can sell. So this would be a far superior solution to that for any number of reasons.
So the question becomes, in the long term, that's an obvious decision, right? You really want to have reuse. But in the short term, can they make their product cheap enough that it makes sense to reuse the components instead of just throwing them out because they're cheap to begin with? And you got to think that as we go down the years here, that silicon is going to start to be a little more precious than it is right now, and that may start to become the case. And they'll be in a prime position maybe in a couple years here.
Right. We don't know if this will go to market anytime soon. But I mean, step one is find a solution. Step two is market viable solution. Step three is profit.
Yeah, profit? With a question mark on the end there?
Maybe. All right, well, for our tip of the week this week, if you have question marks about how your Android phone is working, we've got a solution for that.
Android?
Yeah, I have an Android tip of the week. What do you think about that?
I'm impressed. In fact, I feel like we haven't had an Android tip of the week in a long time, since neither of us use Android at this point in time.
That's right. So that's why something like this is really helpful to me, since I've never used an Android phone as my personal phone. But people ask me a lot, what's wrong with my phone? Can you do something about it? So this great little flowchart is available as a PDF. We found it via Lifehacker. And it guides you through the potential problems that you might be having with your Android phone, and it offers solutions.
Cool. Yeah. So you can just print this out and either use it yourself or pass it along to somebody who needs a little help.
Yeah. Print it out or save it in your Android phone. But then if your PDF reader and your Android phone is not working, then you're really in trouble.
Really in trouble. So does this have rooted? It does. Nice. Yeah. Is your phone rooted? It says install Clockwork Mod ROM Manager. Nice. I like it.
Sweet. So that's our tip of the week, but then we also have an app of the week. Isn't that right, Chris?
I suppose. Are we going to make this a weekly thing? I suppose I do have a bunch of apps that I could get into, but the one I'm going to highlight this week, and we'll see what happens next week, is Next Gen Reader. It's been the winner of the Google Reader app in Windows 8 for me. So,
Sweet. Let me download it for my iPhone.
Yeah, you should. Actually, they do have a Windows Phone app, but I don't think they have an iOS app.
Ah. Well, so then what's the point? Why did you even bring it up, Chris?
Well, because, more and more people are going to start to use Windows 8, and I figured it's time to start thinking about what kind of apps we're going to be using, including the desktop applications that I still use for development and the like. But I think it's time to start thinking about this. And to be quite honest, this app is better than any desktop client I've ever used. Now, it's not terribly feature-rich quite yet. But it looks very interesting to me. So if you want to have a good Google Reader experience on Windows 8 and you don't like the web interface like me, then this seems like a pretty good option.
That's good. If I was using Windows 8, a Google Reader app would definitely be very high on my list.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something you must have. And, using this app beats the pants off of using something like Feed Demon or something like that, and I really like what they're up to here. And their Windows Phone app is also very good. That's how I knew about them in the first place. And I took a tour of all the apps, and this was definitely the best one in my opinion. Of course, other people have different needs, so still have a look at what's out there. But this is my favorite of the bunch.
Well, for our kicker this week, it also comes from Lifehacker, and it is a web app that is called Map2Image. Caret image.
Clearly never meant to be spoken, I suppose.
It doesn't matter what it's called. What it does is it takes Google Maps. It gives you lots of options for customizing the maps. And then you can specify the size of the image that you want to output it to. And then it lets you download a JPEG file of it. So if you are really into maps or you just want to take a map of a specific place and turn it into a highly customized image, you can do that now. So it'll be great for wallpapers. You could even use it for your phone wallpaper or just whatever you want pictures for. I don't know, pictures are pictures.
Yeah, this does look pretty cool. It reminds me of those old-timey like Tradewinds kind of maps.
And, yeah.
But more with roads
well,
and stuff
just
like that.
One of the customized map images that they have on display here at Lifehacker. So if you have any inclination that you like maps and you think you might want to create a picture of some map, this is a great web app to use.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing with us. And I think with that, we're done. It's over for this week.
Oh, good. this week. I was worried.
Yeah, just cleared my whole schedule. Yeah. No, we're not done. We'll be back next week. Don't worry about that part. Oh, that's right. No, actually, I have a bit of an announcement to make, I guess. We're not going to be back next week unless you find another co-host and producer, Taylor.
Ah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I almost forgot about that. So I don't know. Maybe we can get you together with someone else and see what happens. And
we shall see. They don't care about that. They'll find out.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll tweet it out and put it up on Facebook when we know what's going on. But I can at least say I'm not going to be next week. So we'll see what happens with that. Although we will be here weekly other than next week. Just to
on confuse. Mondays now, if you want to tune in live.
That's right. Live on Mondays. So join us in the chat on Monday night and we will be glad to have you. So Taylor, if somebody were to try to contact you, how would they do so?
Well, they would probably open up their phone, unlock it however they unlock it, go into their contacts, and then they would find me there.
Okay, well, thank you for the very detailed explanation there. If you would like, you can...
Well, in the case that I wasn't already in their contacts, I suppose they could try sending me an email, Taylor at thedigitalmediazone.com, or they can get through our joint account, theenduser at thedigitalmediazone.com, or our joint Twitter account, theenduser, at theenduser. Or I guess if you really wanted to get a hold of me, you could try at TaylorPhone. Again, my preferred method is iMessage.
Right, there you go. So if you wanted to get at me, I would be at Chris Hill Barnes.
Oh, I'm going to get at you, but not that.
So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. You can have a look at the other podcasts on the Digital Media Zone. We've got some good ones. Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and the Movie Podcast. And we already told you how to give us some feedback, so I really hope that you'll join us live every Monday, except for perhaps next week. We'll see what happens there. And we are always live at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.